You're listening to The Daily Digestionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and we're here today on Thursday, May 12th, and there's a discussion that me and my good friend and co-host Sven Longshanks are going to have today, and it's about Islamophobia. And, you know, the one thing that always amazes me about the left is they always assume, in some sort of bizarre Freudian thing, that we're afraid of things. You know, if you stand for traditional marriage and stand for traditional, you know, human sexuality of one man and one woman and supporting organic families, you're homophobic. If you oppose the Zionist state blowing up churches and mosques and hospitals and schools in the occupied Gaza Strip, then you're an anti-Semite. And another thing that we're seeing is, of course, if you oppose the idea of massive demographic changes, religious changes, and bringing in people that are actively committing terror attacks on a regular basis, you must be Islamophobic. So on the subject of Islamophobia, we can start off today. So Sven, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing really well, Matt. It's a beautiful day here in Britain again. It's lovely just to have the start of the summer and see everybody out and all the lambs in the fields. It's just lovely, beautiful and green and hot. I just had to get the fan going for the first time this year. But it's crazy what's been going on over here just recently. We had a drill that took place in a supermarket. And it was an Islamic terrorist drill. What would happen if there was a suicide bomber that came in and blew themselves up? And what would the emergency services do and how they would respond? And this was intended to reassure people that we are prepared for in case there's a suicide bomber. So they had this guy come in dressed all in black, letting off firecrackers. And he shouted, "Allah Akbar," exactly as the suicide bombers do. And there's been an uproar. Absolute uproar that this suicide bomber shouted Allah Akbar. Now, as far as I'm aware, all the Islamic terrorists, that's what they shout. Whenever we see them on the television, that's what they shout. And yet they've criticized the police force for having this terrorist shout Allah Akbar. And the head of the police has actually apologized for this. And this happened on exactly the same day that we had an Islamic terrorist in Germany stab four people on a train. And just before he did it, he shouted Allah Akbar. And it's crazy, isn't it? And amongst this uproar, there's been the usual talking heads on the television. And they've been saying, well, why wasn't he reciting the Ten Commandments? Or why wasn't he saying something Jewish? Oh, you don't get Christian terrorists blowing themselves up in shopping centres. When was the last time you heard of a Christian terrorist blowing himself up? The answer is never. That just doesn't go on. And the terrorism that we see, the people blowing themselves up and attacking Westerners, are all Islamic extremists, and they all shout Allah Akbar. I mean, this is just nonsense. Well, yeah, supposed to be as realistic as possible, you know?
Well, and that's the amazing thing. I think the last time a self-identified Christian blew him up in a terror attack, it was probably a member of the Provisional IRA that accidentally set up a bomb he was making, which is a little bit of a different situation than actually going into a crowded market. It was funny enough, you know, you bring this up. I was listening to NPR yesterday, and they were talking about terror attacks that happened, suicide bombings in Baghdad, where in a majority Shiite neighborhood that's been hit several times in the past year, the Islamic State claimed responsibility for it. And they shouted the same thing at these checkpoints, shouted Allahu Akbar, and blew themselves up at checkpoints, killing men, women, and children, and of course soldiers and militiamen. And the idea that it's even a question at this point that there's a difference between radical Islamic extremism and supposed Christian extremism, as you pointed out, I can't think of a single time that a Christian nationalist especially has suicide bombed. That's just not something that we do. And if you look at our religious traditions, of course, suicide is not acceptable. You know, under Christian just war doctrine, there are times to fight. There are plenty of times to fight. If you're fighting for a just cause, if you have a legitimate authority, if you're fighting to protect the innocent, I mean, all these sorts of things. But in that, it's never acceptable to blow yourself up. But these Wahhabi, of course, Saudi-backed extremists, they do it all the time. And it's not just in the West. They're doing it in the Middle East. They're attacking Shiites. They're attacking Christians. They're even attacking Zoroastrians, which is a very bizarre thing for me that you know, a discussion on Zoroastrianism has resurfaced. But the Islamic State has even done suicide bombings against them and against the Kurds and against all these different people. But this is a tactic that they use. They've used it in Iraq and Afghanistan against British troops and American troops. They use it against, you know, different sects of Muslims in the Middle East, against different religious communities. This is something that they do all around the world as one of their best tactics that, you know, they go, they do a bombing, then they'll even have a second bomber shout the same thing and then blow up when doctors and police and stuff show up to be able to help the people who were injured in the first bombing. This is a tactic that's been used by the Islamic State, that's been used by Boko Haram, that's been used by all these different radical jihadist groups, but apparently we're not allowed to talk about the facts. And you know, I think we have a nuanced enough position to be able to know that not all Muslims are exactly the same, because in this case, there's, you know, Islamic groups, especially Shiite Muslims, that are actively battling against the Islamic State, that actively battle against Israel, that actually actively battle against, you know, these radicals. And that's, of course, why our governments have worked to overthrow those regimes. But we're supposed to then allow the importation of millions of these people who have, at the very least, some level of support for the Islamic State and this radical Wahhabi ideology that involves suicide bombings. But we can't talk about the facts because that's the sad nature of the world we live in.
Oh, yeah, it's racist to actually have a mock terror drill. I mean, apparently that's Islamophobic. That's letting ISIS know that we're scared of them. But, you know, what are you supposed to do? You know, you have to prepare for these things. It's like when you have a fire drill, and the fire bell goes and everybody goes and assembles outside. And, you know, it's the same thing. We're now having to have terror drills for in case a suicide bomber blows himself up. And no, we wouldn't have any fear of attack if we didn't actually have Muslims in our countries in the first place. That's the reason for why we are having these attacks. But to say that we cannot even identify the threat, we cannot identify it as an Islamic threat, we have to say, oh yes, but it could be a Christian threat, when there's never been a Christian threat like that, is just ridiculous. It's just a symptom of the mania, the insanity that our people have at the moment for Muslims, covering up the crimes that they commit. And even the ones that don't commit these crimes, that don't blow themselves up, they still manage to take over an area. I mean, I've said it before, I don't really see the difference between ISIS taking over Palmyra and putting one of their generals in charge to 1.3 Muslims immigrating into London and then putting one of their Muslims in charge as a mayor, which is what this Sadiq Khan is now. I mean, okay, ISIS kill a lot more people, but the end result is still the same. It's Muslims in charge with a Muslim running things, which is what we've now got in London. I mean, it's really shocking to see that. And the only person that's actually spoken any sense about this was Donald Trump, who said, well, we should stop allowing Muslims in. He didn't say we should send all the ones here back, which is what does need to happen, but at least he said we should stop them coming in. And they're still making a song and dance about this on the news at the moment, that this terrible thing that Donald Trump said about not allowing Muslims in, when it's just sensible. I mean, if you've got crocodiles, not all crocodiles are man-eating crocs, but you still don't want crocodiles in your lake that's nearby you that you go swimming in. It's the same thing. Not all Muslims are going to blow themselves up, but there still is a percentage that are going to do that. And there's also a percentage that are going to go out and try and find 12-year-old white girls so that they can turn them into sex slaves. And it's barbaric, the things that they do. And it's not all of them, but it is a percentage of them. And wherever they are, that's what goes on. So, you know, unless we're just going to accept this, unless we're just going to say, oh yeah, that's fine. Well, we might get a bit of terrorism. We might have some of our young white girls raped. Some of them might be turned into sex slaves. But hey, you know, we get some great kebabs. You know, we mustn't show them we're frightened. You know, what do you do?
Well, you know, I mean, and with your example about crocodiles, I don't think it would be reptilophobic to to do crocodile drills at the local elementary school to say if a crocodile wanders into the store, what you should do to be able to handle it. That doesn't mean you hate crocodiles. You know, I don't hate Muslims. I want them to be able to be in their countries. I disagree with their religion. I disagree with a lot of the way their societies are organized under Sharia law, but they can do that in their land, in their territories, whatever fits their people. But we don't have to let them here. And it's absolutely insane to me, especially with this recent election in London with Shadiq Khan. The idea that the Queen, who of course, you know, is based in London, you know, it's the capital of the United Kingdom. The idea that the Queen takes an oath to God and country to defend it, that she actually takes an oath to the Anglican Church, if memory serves me right. And now the city is being governed by someone who isn't even just not Anglican, but isn't Christian at all. Is actually has a different faith and supports bringing more of his countrymen in from around the world to be able to demographically, culturally, and religiously change the landscape of England. So, I mean, Sven, kind of one question for me, because you're a Brit, is, how does that feel? I mean, what do you think on that? The idea that there's a Muslim mayor of London now. I mean, what to you as a British person what are your thoughts and feelings?
Well, it's shameful, really, that we've allowed this to happen. And I'm glad that I don't live anywhere near London. I don't want to be around anywhere near these people. I had a shock today. I went out and I was in the shops and I was just leaving and there was a Negro there working for a charity. I hadn't noticed him, but he started asking me whether I wanted to give money to his charity, which I just totally ignored him. It was a shock to actually see him and it put a downer on the rest of the day. And like, I really wasn't myself for the rest of the day because I wasn't expecting to see that because I live in an area that doesn't have diversity in it because we're miles away from the city. So, and you know, they can't really survive out here, but just seeing that was a shock. So to think that London is now 60%, 55% made up of non-whites is just horrific, to be honest. It really is horrific. And the Queen is an absolute traitor. She's not just taken an oath to the Church of England, but she's the head of the Church of England. Then if you look at what the Church of England has done, you've got the Church of England, the Anglican Church, you've got that in Africa. It's not the Church of Africa. It's the Church of England in Africa that they have to join. It's like it's an internationalist organization. I think once they had the Protestant Revolution, I think a lot of the Protestants just turned to internationalism, and they used their religion as a form of internationalism, almost like a communism, but with God involved in it. And it's quite tragic, really. You would think that if they had a Reformation, they would have gone back to the original church traditions rather than starting something off entirely new, which is what they did. But the Queen is supposedly the head of this, and she's supposed to protect her people. And she doesn't protect her people. But that actual revolution, what a lot of people don't realize is, or the Reformation, is how much the Jews were involved in that. I mean, that is really shocking. These converso Jews that would then call themselves Protestants, that would fund these revolutions, that were printing Bibles with Jewish translations of the Bible to send them out. You know, there was a lot of Jewish intrigue that went on in that Reformation. And I think we can trace our troubles sort of back to that time, really. You know, about 400 or 500 years ago, because that was also at the time that the Bank of England was started up. And of course, back then, we knew what the threat the Muslims were. We knew they were coming to the shores of Europe and snatching people to use as slaves. You know, 1 million white people they took as slaves. Our mama's plays featured the Turk as the devil. St. George would fight against the Turk, this Turkish devil. And of course, today, they'll try and claim that St. George was a Turk. That he was some kind of Muslim. Yeah, seriously.
I'm literally looking at an icon in a style of that's over 1,000 years old of St. George that's on my icon wall that I'm looking at right now. And I tell you what, he doesn't look Turkish to me. But, you know, it's just the same as the BBC is doing. It's a Shakespearean play. And they now have a black queen of England. As you know, starring in that, and it's a total rewriting of our history. And this is the thing that people don't understand. It isn't just about the demographics; it's also about the culture. You know, as we were talking about yesterday, with the idea of the myths of a people, of the traditions of a people, of the heroes of a people, they are actually trying to rewrite our history. It's not just about World War II. I mean, everyone focuses a lot on revisionism there, but they're trying to do revisionism on every part of European history. You know, whether it's here in America or whether it's in Europe, they're trying to take whites out of things that we actually did and trying to make it multicultural to try and reflect this new world that they're trying to make. And of course, if you're a historian or someone that just wants to talk about the truth, who might not even be a nationalist, you're called a racist and a, you know, neo-Nazi and a supremacist and all these things just for talking about the facts, just for, like we're talking about with the radical Islamic extremism, just to acknowledge that you're most likely going to be bombed by a radical Wahhabi Muslim than you are a Baptist and a suicide bombing when you're out going to get food for supper. To talk about the facts is considered phobic of some, whatever the group is. And they're really trying to redefine our culture, and they're trying to take away our ancestors' struggles and to put other ethnic groups into it. And I think that's wrong, just as it would be wrong for us to go in and try and take away Africans' culture or Muslims' culture, things like that, and say that we did everything. No, that's wrong too. But they're totally trying to erase our history in this very Orwellian thing, because if they control the mass media, if they control the textbooks, if they control the history books and things like that, then over the course of generations, by introducing these lies, they can actually begin to redefine the perception of history. And that's a very terrifying thing.
Well, yeah, a lot of this is, you know, as you were saying there with Shakespeare, where they're replacing people in Shakespeare with blacks who were never here in Britain anyway. But they're also twisting the history. They're trying to say that Negroes came over here and helped build Hadrian's Wall. And what they really mean is that Africans came over here. And what they mean by Africans is Romans that were living in the African colonies that Rome had in Carthage. You know, there were white people in Africa. The king of Africa came over to Britain. It's in the British Chronicle, and he was the king of the Vandals. And yet it's written in the Chronicles as an African king. So what they would do is they'll tell the British school children that there was an African king that came over to Britain, and they'll think that it's a Negro king, and the teachers won't tell them any different. They'll encourage them to think that it was a Negro king that came over from Africa. And this is where you get these crazy ideas from the black Israelites in America that claim that blacks were responsible for all of this. It's because in the records, when it would say African king, it meant a white king from Africa. It never meant a Negro. And it's quite easily provable, this sort of stuff. But what they're trying to do is erase our history and interpose these other peoples in it. But it even goes back further than that, Matt. It goes back further than what they're doing with Europe, because what they've managed to do is with all the earlier civilizations that we know were white, Babylonian, Assyrian, the Aryan Hindu one, these old civilizations, Egyptian civilization, we know that they were all started off by white people. But what people tend to think now is that the Egyptian civilization must have been with the same people that are in Egypt now, must have been with the Arabs. The Aryan Hindu civilization must have been with the Indians that are over there now. But the problem is, these people that are living there now are living there among ruins. But if white people were to find out that those civilizations were originally white civilizations, and that they were wiped out through interbreeding with these other races, then they might think about what's going on now, because that is exactly what is happening to us right now. With this diversity, with multiculturalism, it's just replacing us, basically. And it's all been done before.
Well, you know, it's, for instance, if I were to go to Constantinople today, I mean, there's a few thousand. It's amazing how the genocide of the Greek population just in the last 100 years has really almost been totally completed. But, you know, the idea that I could go to Constantinople and look at all these historical buildings and stuff like that, and the Turks are like, yep, we built this. and it's like, no, actually, those were the Greeks before, of course, the Jews opened the gates of Constantinople. As you brought up the Protestant Reformation, it's a really good point on the idea of simultaneously we see the attempts to take down and destroy the Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church within a very short period of time, with supporting the Protestant Reformation against the Catholic Church that, of course, had kept the Jews under control in Europe, and then the Jews opening the gates of Constantinople, leading to a huge blow to Orthodoxy in the East and allowing the Turks to be able to take over that territory that had been Greek for centuries, for a very, very long time. And it's an amazing thing to be able to see that our enemies work, you know, they work in tribal interests, and that's what Jews do, and that's what every group of people should do. It's what Europeans should be doing. But these Jews simultaneously tried to destroy our religion, and to be able to take things out and then be able to have their merchant interests be able to come in and redefine things that have been the cornerstones of European civilization for centuries. And we're just living with the after effects. I mean, they're still attacking us, but we're living with the after effects of wars that they've started, over five centuries ago. And they're just continuing this process of demographic displacement. I mean, if you just want to look at the idea of, of leadership in the Middle East, look at Bashar al-Assad, look at Bashar al-Assad's wife. Look at the Aryans that are still there in small tribes in Afghanistan and other places that are blonde hair and blue eyed. These are people that have been there for a very long time, but it's the sort of thing that I wouldn't be surprised if they started to do it. The idea that, if they started calling George Washington, a Cherokee Indian, because Cherokees used to run, and live in Virginia. So obviously anything that came out of Virginia had to come from the Cherokees or the Choctaws or things like that. But no, that demographics shift and people groups move around, tribes move around, and we've all known that throughout history. But you're right, they're trying to redefine historical civilizations in a way to be able to really tell us that that we don't have a history, we don't have a culture, and our ancestors weren't our ancestors. And it's a very malicious thing they're doing. You know, it's really inspiring racial hatred and just racial shame, because it's almost the left wing and Jewish media seems to tell us that the white civilization, we had the Dark Ages, which is a term that comes out of the French Revolution when they were attacking the monarchies and they were attacking Christianity. Now we've got the Dark Ages, and then we've got imperialism, where we were mean to every group of people on the planet. And then we're here today. We did the Holocaust, and then we're here today and we almost die. That's kind of the historical narrative that's been woven about Europeans. And there's nothing farther from the truth, especially if you look at the Middle Ages, especially if you look at all these different things that Europeans were involved in, that they really are redefining in an Orwellian way of throwing things down the memory hole of destroying our heritage and our culture.
Well, yeah, we're being given a Jewish version of history. I think I'm really glad you brought up Constantinople there, because the majority of our people don't know that Constantinople, or Istanbul, as it's called now, used to be white. You know, they think that that's Turkish. If you say to people the center of Christendom, which Christendom was Europe, the center of Europe was Constantinople, which is over there in Turkey now. And you think what the Muslims did when they got there, they desecrated the cathedral, they desecrated the Hagia Sophia, which was the jewel of Christendom. They desecrated it and turned it into a mosque. And then today, you've got Safed Khan, or whatever his name is, in the cathedral being sworn in as mayor. And I'm sure that thought must have gone through his head. You know, my ancestors, look what we did to the cathedral on Constantinople, and we're going to do the same to this one when we get powerful enough. Now, just to allow him to set foot into a cathedral and be sworn in after what they did to the cathedral that used to in Constantinople, that Hagia Sophia, it's horrific. What we're being told is a Jewish version of history. As you say, this, the Dark Ages, that they call them dark, the Enlightenment, they call the Enlightenment, but the Enlightenment was basically Kabbalah and Jews, and people going to the Jews and being taught about the Kabbalah and summoning up demons and magic spirits and breaking up the church. And it was basically the triumph of the Jews. That was when they really started to gain the upper hand. And then once they had the French Revolution, where they destroyed everything and emancipated the Jew, once there was nothing standing in the way of the Jew becoming a politician and owning businesses and owning land, well, that was it. You know, they were able to take over. And yet we're taught that that was the beginning of democracy and liberty, fraternity, egalitarianism, equality, all that sort of thing we're told is wonderful. But it all came from the Jews in the French Revolution. And what we did, we got rid of the kings. Now, the monarchy wasn't always good. Okay, we did have some bad kings, but at least we did have some good kings. We had good kings that stand the test of time. 1,000 years later, we still honour their name. People like Alfred the Great was our great British king, but there's been plenty of them. There's been a few bad ones, but at least we had the good ones. And what happened when we got rid of the absolute rule of the monarchy? We brought in the rule of capitalism, and we brought in materialism, and we brought in usury and slavery to these debt masters, basically. And now we've become slaves to materialism. I mean, E. Michael Jones has done a fantastic piece on it about how we swapped our old masters, who were the monarchy, for the bankers. And it was basically even worse. You know, it's usually better the devil you know. If you have a big revolution, get rid of what you've got there now. What comes after is usually a lot worse. A real revolution is like the National Socialist one, where they came to power legitimately. It's like the Green Revolution in Libya, where there wasn't a drop of blood spilled. It was a genuine revolution of the people. But when you have something like the French Revolution or the Bolshevik Revolution or any of these CIA color revolutions, they're all sponsored and stirred up by the Jews. It's all about putting the Jews in power.
Well, exactly. Well, yeah, and you hit on, I mean, in kind of going back to Protestantism, especially low church Protestantism, I mean, we see with the Enlightenment, Judeo-Masonic alliance, where you've got the Gentiles that put capital ahead of faith, family, and folk, that want profits more than anything else. They partnered with the Jews, during the Enlightenment especially, to be able to sell out their own countrymen so they could make profits, so they could become the rich families. And that's one of the big differences between, traditional hierarchy and monarchy, because the way it used to be, you know, again, we used to have bad kings. Not every king was good. You're right. But the idea of noblesse oblige, the idea of the noble's obligation to care for the peasants. If there was a famine, they had to feed them. If they were sick, they were to build hospitals for their spiritual needs. They would build churches, and the church was there as the advocate of the people to ensure that the nobles were doing their obligation. You know, the church could excommunicate a ruler that was unjust, and then they would lose through divine right. If they no longer had God's blessing to be the ruler, then they were no longer the king. So the church was always the defender of the people. And that's how in the Orthodox view, we have the idea of symphony, the idea of church and state working, you know, two heads on the same bird, where the bird is the people, working together, where you have a monarchy, but it's not an absolute monarchy. You have checks and balances to ensure that they can't be tyrants. They have to care for their people. But now what do we have? Liberal democracy, all it is we're all servants, we're all serfs in a worse way than we ever had in Europe, to the globalists, to the internationalists, to these Jewish bankers. And who are our advocates? We have no advocates. You know, there is no, the church isn't there to be our advocates anymore, because the Jews have attacked and destroyed those institutions. You know, the Bolsheviks blew up thousands of churches and things like that. And the monarchy isn't beholden to the people. Because the way it used to be, the monarch, we of course would have the land and the serfs and things like that, but he got his money, he got his food, he got his soldiers, he got everything from the land, from the people, and the lower lords, who were directly connected to the people, could not send him money, could not send him armies, if they disagreed with what they were being used for. And the lower lords were advocates for the people as well. And the system worked for over a millennia, you know, and before the Christian era, the idea of tribal chieftains were just monarchs on the smaller community-based level. But we've replaced that. So now we have no advocates, we have to be our own advocates, which is a job that we're all standing up for. But all we have simply are Jewish globalist paymasters that wish to rule all of us and just wish to dominate us in a far more totalitarian system for the bad than we ever had under the monarchies of Europe, because it's the ultimate tyranny, where they're not beholden to any principles, they're not beholden to us, they're not beholden to the land or the people or God. They're beholden to themselves, and they see us as resources to be used, abused, and thrown away. And that's why liberal democracy is an utter failure.
Well, yeah, the only thing that we're told that links us together now with people is just a piece of paper with the name of the country on it. There's no blood or heritage or anything that actually links us together with people. This is how this Sadiq Khan could get voted in as mayor, because he has a piece of paper that says he's British. He has no ancestors that are British. He has none of his predecessors are buried in the soil of Britain. They're buried in the soil of Pakistan or were cremated over there in Pakistan. He's got nothing to actually link him to the British people. But because he has a piece of paper that says British citizen on it, then he's exactly the same as everyone else, and he can become mayor. So as many of the Muslims that can come over here, all they have to do is just register to become citizens and all vote for one of their own, and they can take over in that way. This is why I don't see it's any different to ISIS moving into Aleppo or Palmyra and taking that over. It's just they did that with guns blazing. Sadiq Khan has taken over London just with sheer weight of numbers and the vote over the years. You know, it's two different, well, you know, there's many different ways to swing a cat, as they say.
Exactly. And if you look in Canada, I was actually reading something about all of these, non-Anglosphere people from the third world who are coming. They'll take their oath of citizenship, which includes an oath to the Queen. And, then they'll get their piece of paper that says they're Canadian, and then they'll instantly go and renege on their promise and, say that they gave that oath under duress and they don't swear allegiance to the Queen. And again, this is not promoting the Queen of England or anything, but it's simply just saying these people that come here to get their piece of paper, their promises literally aren't worth the paper they're printed on. All they're doing is coming. Demographics is destiny. They're colonizing us. They're colonizing our culture and our people. They're destroying our identity. They're destroying our history, and they're taking over land. I mean, that's why we have little Mexicos in the United States. That's why we have these immigrant communities. That's why in Wisconsin, we have a huge Somali community that they just did a huge bust in, because a large number of the Somali community were supporting ISIS and trying to get guys to go over and fight for ISIS. That wasn't happening in Wisconsin when it was all German 100 years ago. But this is what happens when demographics shift. So Sven, what's your as we come to the end of our show, what's your final thought for the day?
Well, I was just thinking, what value does an oath have if you don't believe in God and you don't even have a fear of God? These oaths don't mean anything anymore. We've lost the value of the oath. I think we need to instill a faith in God. If the people don't have a faith in God, how can they take an oath? And our whole system is based on oaths. And this Sadiq Khan, his God isn't our God. His God is the moon god, Allah. So even, how can his oath actually have any weight or any value? Maybe that's something that could be looked into as to the legality of whether anyone that's non-white could become a part of our system, because they have a different God. And the whole system is based on oaths. It's all based on oaths to God. So maybe that's worth looking into. I'll look into that when we finish this podcast, actually.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of my final thought. Here in the United States, there used to be you have to make an oath to God when you were accepting a position. And that's the way it used to be. It is based on English common law, but that's been destroyed. So we have to bring it back, ladies and gentlemen. Got to get back to that old-time religion, old-time traditions, and fight for our people, because we are our people's advocates. So, Sven, thank you for joining me today. Thank you, dear listeners. And we'll be back with John Friend tomorrow, same time, same place. And I'll look forward to talking to you guys then, and we'll be able to continue this conversation. So see you tomorrow, and hail victory.
Tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArian.com.